What just happened?
Planning a trip?
Mm-hmm. Going to Europe.
School trip.
Did you get your passport?
Peter Parker here to pick up a passport, please.
Mini toothpaste?
Mm-hmm.
Pack your suit.
I just want to go on my trip with my friends.
Europe doesn't really need a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
You look really pretty.
Therefore, I have value.
No, that's not right.
I'm messing with you. You look pretty, too.
I just want to spend some time with MJ. I think she really likes you, dude.
That reminds me of when I first fell in love. I had just finished my phone call.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Discussing Comics, and on this episode, we will be reviewing Spider-Man Far From Home. So welcome back, Megan McGee. Megan, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Well, glad to have you back. Question for you, how was 4th of July?
It was actually really good. A lot of family came over, and we celebrated my daughter's birthday and then one of our cousins' birthdays.
Sweet. Sweet. So, Ron, how are you? Ron Stevens from the Extremely Geeked Out podcast. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, sir.
So what about you? How was 4th of July for you?
It was quite relaxing. It rained on 4th of July over here, so couldn't really go out to do anything, really. Kind of didn't want to do anything because 4th of July was on the middle of the week anyways, so we had to be back at work the following morning, so couldn't really stay out late or if you wanted to do anything. So, but anyway, it did rain, so it kind of kept us in. It was nice, relaxing, good time spending with the little guy and the wife.
Cool. So for me, I actually went and saw Spider-Man that day. So I went that afternoon. So my 4th of July was Spider-Man. So that was cool.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. So for anyone listening, if you have not seen Spider-Man Far From Home, put us on pause, go out, go watch the movie, then come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers. Affirmative. Spoilers. Spoilers. Affirmative. Spoilers.
So nice to finally meet you,
Spider-Man.
You're Nick Fury.
Put some clothes on. Let's go for a ride.
Is he gonna be okay like that?
Might want to turn him over so he doesn't swallow his tongue.
I think Nick Fury just hijacked our summer vacation.
Awesome!
You got gifts, Parker. But we have a job to do. Are you going to step up or not?
You're all alone. Your friends are in trouble. What are you going to do about it?
You don't want any part of this.
Who is that guy?
He's like Iron Man and Thor rolled into one.
He's no Spider-Man.
What is it with you and Spider-Man?
What, he looks out for the neighborhood, has a dope suit, and I really respect him. Sup, dickwad?
Cool.
All right, so question, and ladies first. So, Megan, I'm going to start with you. Just a summary view, just, you know, the big overview. What did you think of this movie?
I loved it. Actually, I mean, but I'm a big Spider-Man fan. I'm a huge Tom Holland as Spider-Man fan. So I was going in and I genuinely did. It was a really, really good movie.
All right, Ron, what about you? What did you think?
Well, first of all, brownie points for you, Megan, for being a Spider-Man fan, because I'm a Spider-Man fan.
Yes,
I am. But yeah. Watched it Saturday and man, it was really good. By far, in my opinion, the best Spider-Man movie yet.
Okay, so I'm going to sound like I'm repeating you guys by saying I had fun with this. Now, I'm not as big a Spider-Man fan, Ron, as I think you are, But that being said, there is something about Tom Holland's interpretation
of Spider-Man.
Peter, yes, yeah. is just yes. he's got an just like a genuine good guy feel about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he was made for this. And I mean, not to typecast him or anything, because he's, you know, good in other movies, but he's Spider-Man more than Andrew Garfield or Tobey Maguire, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I think MCU has done a really good job by emphasizing that Spider-Man is a kid.
Yes.
They really bring that element of him being a kid, and he's going to make kid mistakes, you know, so they definitely emphasize that in MCU, and I love that about Spider-Man. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you guys about two other characters that are in the Spider-Man orbit, or, you know, kind of revolve around Spider-Man. And let's start with Aunt May first. This version of Aunt May is more like the ultimate version in the sense mm-hmm. of she's not the, oh, Peter, that horrible, horrible Spider-Man. You know, she's not that. So what do you guys think of having this hip version of Aunt May?
I think it fits with the Spider-Man we have now, which is more younger, and she can actually keep up with Peter, in a sense. I don't see how you could really have like an 80-plus-year-old aunt who could that's got one foot out the door, pretty much. I don't think that would have been all that too. I guess it wouldn't really fit with the age they have Peter right now, which is basically, I think he's a sophomore.
Yes.
Now, I think having someone that's a little. I mean, of course. I think she, like someone maybe in their late 40s, early 50s, I think is more fitting for the style of Peter Parker they put in the movies now. I like how Tomi is like this more fun, outgoing, like you said, Kyle, as how she's more of the ultimate Spider-Man, which she was more adventurous and more outgoing.
Right.
More lively. So it fits.
All right, so Megan, what about you? What's your take on this version of Aunt May?
I actually enjoy this version of Aunt May, and I also think that, I mean, I don't know about the comics, but I know in the movies they made it sound like she didn't know it. I think it's just a lot more realistic that she knows that he's Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and she's on board with it. You know what I mean? And so I definitely like this Spider-Man, and I mean this Aunt May better. I am curious though, the way they did this, they didn't really go through a whole beginning. You know what I mean? Like there was no Uncle Ben, there was no, like they passed all that. And I like the approach that they took, but I mean, is that still supposed to have happened in this version of Spider-Man?
All right. So let me reply by asking this question to you. Tell me the origin of Superman. Give me Superman's origin.
Superman's origin?
Yeah, Superman. Has nothing to do with Spider-Man, but just tell me, from what you know, just if somebody were to ask you, how did Superman come to be? What's his origin in the comics, just from what you know?
Oh, in the comics?
Or just in the movies?
So my understanding is that something happened on this planet where it got destroyed. His mom, before they were killed, sent him to Earth in a ship. He crashed in Smallville, and his mom, two people, farmers, got him.
Perfect. So you just proved my point to answer your question. Everyone knows that the whole Spider-Man origin story. So we've already seen it twice. We don't need it again.
No. That's what I'm saying. I love this approach because we do not need to see it again. I'm just wondering if that all that still happened. You know what I mean? Like,
there's different versions
of it. He, you know, in this one, so there's no Harry. MJ hasn't come yet. Or I'm sorry, Mary Jane hasn't come yet. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, because even to your point, even in the other Spider-Man, he was supposed to be a sophomore. He was still in high school in every single one of these Spider-Man versions of Spider-Man, but they had Uncle Ben in each one. May was older, so they've changed things in this one. So I was wondering if, you know, that still was supposed to have happened. We just skipped over it, which I'm completely okay with.
What
I'm
do you think, Ryan?
Still happen.
Do you think it still happened?
It's hard to say because, like, there's no mention of. I mean, there's like this vague, very vague, like as saying it may have had happened in Civil War when he was explaining, you know, when how he got his powers and what, you know, all the consequences happen of him using his powers. But at the same time, he didn't really express about mention about Uncle Ben, not even in Homecoming or in, definitely not in
Far From Home.
It's more so if anything, it seems that he's already moved on.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not really a guilt trip like it was with Tobey Maguire's on Spider-Man, where he was constant, like he was basically his conscience in all the movies.
See, what I think is so refreshing about this is, for all intents and purposes, whether Uncle Ben existed or not in this universe, I think in the Marvel universe that we're seeing now, the Uncle Ben purpose or the Uncle Ben character is really Tony Stark in this story.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I was, you know, I kind of assumed that maybe it didn't happen in this one because it is a younger Aunt May and, you know, and then they had her kind of dating in this one, which I mean, is completely fine. Obviously, people move on after a loss. But I just, you know, I figured that because he hasn't been Spider-Man for long, like that's clear. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. I mean, it's been 5 years, obviously, from Endgame. But I mean, like before that, it hadn't been that long. And, you know, so I was just wondering.
No, very good question.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys, what did you think about sitting down in the theater, you're watching the opening, you know, trailers that we always see. Then you know, movie's about to start. Here comes the Marvel logo and you're hearing Whitney Houston, "I Will Always Love You." What did you guys think when you heard that?
Well, Megan, you go first.
To be completely honest with you, I missed like the first 3 minutes and I cried. I almost cried. I was very not happy about it. I was going to go see it again today, but I didn't have time. So I'd love to hear y'all's take on it because I didn't know that happened and I'm excited to see why it happened. I'm interested.
All right. So Ron, take that away.
Well, it was like trying because you always want, I was kind of excited to hear the classic 60s Spider-Man theme song fanfare they did in Homecoming. I was kind of hoping to hear that again, but then you started hearing Whitney Houston singing, and I was like, okay, where are they going with this? And then you see a picture of Tony, and I'm like, oh, God. And immediately I start chuckling about the whole entire thing. And then realizing it was a scene, it was a tribute to all the fallen Avengers, which I'm not sure why they put Captain America in because he didn't really die. I guess they just thought that he went back in time and he never came back and whatever. But then you realize it's the high school just giving a whole big tribute to him. And it's kind of fun. It was funny. I thought it was pretty funny.
All right. So for me, I was fresh out of high school when that song came out. And it seemed like everybody was taking Whitney Houston and doing the exact same thing as we saw them doing. So for me, it was like cheesing out over, oh, that is so freaking cool, because I remember people doing that. That being said, I thought it was a very cool way to segue into showing like these are all the characters that died in Endgame. And to comment, Ron, on the comment you said about Captain America, I would speculate that the general public may have thought that Captain America died, if he did go back into the past, that he would have just disappeared.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And I wish, I have so much to say about Endgame, but this is about Spider-Man, so we're not going to go there. But I do think that when he went back in time, he didn't do anything as Captain America. I think he lived a normal life.
He lived his life, yeah.
And so I'm thinking like the Captain America from, what year is that? 2000. I don't know, whatever, is now no longer, like, he stopped being Captain America to a certain point, and he just disappeared. right? So then they're thinking maybe he is dead.
That's what I would think. I mean, we know it because we're the audience. The right. Avengers know it because, you know, well, Sam and Bucky know it. But I would say your general population doesn't know what happened to Captain America.
Right.
Now you put it that way, that makes sense. That does make sense.
So let me ask you guys about another character that is in the orbit of Spider-Man. And her name is Michelle/MJ. You know, so we had a lot of social media back and forth this week that we're recording this with Ariel being cast as a live action movie, and the person that is going to be portraying the character is not Halle Berry. It's Haley Bailey, not Berry. Yeah.
Not Barry.
Yeah.
That being said, there's been a lot of back and forth as, you know, Ariel's supposed to be this white mermaid with red hair, and she's got to be that. What do you guys think of having Zendaya play Michelle Watson, MJ, not Mary Jane Watson?
I don't have a problem with it at all. And for, like, okay, this is my whole prospect, because a lot of people, it's a very touchy subject about diversity swapping in comic book movies, particularly, and just in general, books or whatever. But I don't think it really matters unless there is some kind of ethnical tie to it. For example, Black Panther.
Correct.
He has to be black because he's from Africa. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. There's a Shang-Chi movie coming out, so he has to be Asian because he's from China. He knows Kung Fu. He's a Kung Fu master, greatest Kung Fu master ever. So that he has to be Asian. Captain America, he would have to be white. But yes, I know that Sam Wilson, of course, has been Captain America. He's now Captain America now in the MCU, but he would have to be, Steve Rogers himself would have to be white, because
that is the character.
That is the character. And based off of what time he was a superhero, that opportunity would have not fallen to the lap of someone not white.
Agreed. So what do you think, Megan?
Maybe I missed the fact that her last name was Watt. I thought that, because, you know, I read in the comics, not the comics, I read on, like, you know, Wikipedia, one of these, not too long ago, that he dated a Michelle, but she was Hispanic, like, in college. So I thought that they were just kind of mixing timelines or, like, mixing universes and just, you know, dropped her in this one. So I didn't know that it was a Michelle Watson instead of a Mary Jane Watson. Like, I was under the assumption that Mary Jane was still coming.
Well,
even knowing that she's not, I'm cool with it.
Well, having said, I'm saying Watson because they, you know, he referred to her as MJ in this one, but he did refer to her in Homecoming, I think until the very end of the movie, as Michelle. And then I think at the end, she says, "You can call me MJ."
MJ. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the professor or the teacher that did, you know, that little collegiate thing that they were in, he called her full name. And I don't remember hearing Watson. Now, again, I might be wrong and I might not have picked up on that. I was just waiting on Mary Jane and it never happened. So when they said Michelle, I went back to all the girls that he's dated, and there was a Michelle that he dated in college. And so I just assumed that's who she was supposed to be. But if her last name, like I said, either way it goes, I love their chemistry. I love Zendaya as an actress. So I'm here completely for it. Completely.
I'm with it too. It's your typical awkward teenage relationship.
And I'll take you one step further. I like her better than I liked the original casting of MJ from the, you know, the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire movies, she actually 100%. Got on my nerves.
Yeah, Kristen Dunst was. Yeah, Kristen Dunst was like the worst girlfriend ever.
I mean, you know, in the second trilogy when they had Gwen Stacy, I was on board for her. But I just like the fact that this portrayal, whether she's Michelle or MJ or whoever she is, I like the fact that she's not your typical, oh, Peter, come rescue me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She ran out with a javelin like, I'm ready. Let's do
this. Yeah, let's go.
you know, let me comment also on one other character that worked, in my opinion, on based on how they did the story, was Michael B. Jordan when he was cast as Johnny Storm. Regardless of, I didn't think that was a very good movie itself, in the context of the story and how they explained it, I saw that as perfectly reasonable that you had a biracial family with I'm assuming the mother was white and she had a white daughter, and then the father was African American and so was his son. Whether that's the story of the movie or not, I know you are a Michael B. Jordan fan, Megan. Am I not correct in that?
I am. Yes, my understanding is that it was how it happened, or she was adopted. I think that's what it was.
She was adopted.
I think she was adopted.
But if you make it make sense in the movie, you know, like given logical explanation, whether, like I said, you know, mixed family or adopted child still makes it a mixed family. I don't care. It just as long as it's a well acted part and it's a good movie. Now, what Ron said about Black Panther, I also 1,000,000% agree with, because you couldn't have a white dude come in and say, hi, I'm T'Challa.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I understand that. And to go back onto Fantastic Four, I think the issue with that movie is the fact that they weren't a family. It's that they owe all of them, like, really, in a sense, hated each other. And even at the end of the movie, it kind of, things were still awkward between them, but they're, I guess they just kind of maybe put it aside to them. But yeah, for them not to act the way they are, like how the, you know, to be a family, it didn't really work. For them to constantly be poking jabs at each other or, you know, trying to basically dismiss the other one, it didn't really work for that version of the movie. But to back onto the ethnical swapping, you can't. It's not much of an issue. Like I said, but if you are to put someone that has to be that race, then you can't really move it. Like if you take away what you know, what Mary Jane looks like you just didn't know what she looked like, but you just go by off of what you know, as far as she is, you know, she's a
born from New York.
She's born from New York. She can act. She can sing. And she models.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That really doesn't really depict that person to be white, period. She can be any race if you want it to be. Mm-hmm. So you can, that something like that. You know what? You can even put that on Peter Parker as well.
Absolutely, you could.
You could.
1,000,000% you could.
You could also change Peter Parker in a movie if you wanted to. You could. Because of the fact that there has been numerous people, numerous characters playing Spider-Man. Granted, they're totally different people. They weren't Peter, but you could mix things up because you already have in this version of Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man's best friend is Ned, but really it's Genki.
Thank you.
It's really Genki from the Ultimate Comic Books. You just gave him Ned Leeds' name, I guess, but they just call him Ned. I'm assuming it's Ned Leeds. That was technically, if I'm not mistaken, that was the original Hobgoblin, right?
I think so, yes.
So, yeah, I don't know if they're trying to sneak in maybe a Hobgoblin arc in there, maybe. I don't know. But that was a Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales' best friend version. So you could make Peter Black if you wanted to. But
so here's my comment on that. I agree with you, but mm-hmm. I think the way they did it by not having Spider-Man rebooted as, you know, having a Black Spider-Man be Peter Parker, but instead have it be Miles Morales. Mm-hmm. He was a character that was able to completely identify himself totally as not a carbon copy of Spider-Man.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which I would go down to saying I kind of like Miles a little bit better than I do at Peter in many ways.
His story is definitely more intriguing. It's even more heartbreaking because Miles Morales went through so much more. He through his first 5 months maybe as Spider-Man than Peter did within the first 5 years as him being Spider-Man. I mean, he lost his uncle, his mother, and almost lost his father, and all within a course of a few months, or eight. I think it was 8 months during his first arc, I think. So, I mean,
and you find out your uncle is a villain.
A villain, yeah, right. Yeah. So there's a lot of drama, or a lot of good stories you can use with Miles Morales if they decided to use him.
So I'm curious, there's a mystery here, and Ron, you may be able to help me solve this. So the mystery is a little bit mysterious with who is our, bad segue here, our villain of this, who is Mysterio. So tell everyone who is Mysterio.
Mysterio, a.k.a. Quentin Beck, who appeared in Amazing Spider-Man number 13. Created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko themselves. Beck has a long... Well, I'll go up by saying, before I get into this history, but Beck was an actor, a stunt double, to be a little more accurate, who basically didn't get the right recognitions that he wanted, to further his career. So he fell into some hard times and started getting into the villainy career. And his first act as Mysterio, he decided to rob a robbery at a museum, but proposing himself as the hero and making it seem as Spider-Man being the villain. Well, that clearly didn't stick very long, so backfiring, and he went through a long history of just trying to frame Spider-Man basically, and trying to just destroy his reputation. He's gone on to not even try to cause havoc with Spider-Man's life, but also Daredevil as well. He even tried to get at Daredevil, which I didn't realize that either, but when I read up on that, I was like, wow, okay, he didn't hold back on anybody else too. But I want to say this, I think this was a pretty spot on adaptation for being his first time being in a movie. I think that was pretty accurate of how Quentin Beck is in the comic books.
All right. I agree. Very very good synopsis, by the way. So, Megan, what did you mm-hmm. think of Mysterio as the bad guy?
Well, I thought that the angle was very well. So, in the promo, Marvel did a really good job about making it seem like Mysterio and Spider-Man were friends. And so, that's all they were, Tom Holland and Jake Gyllenhaal, that's all they were able to say, that it was refreshing to have a friend in the movie. And so, I knew that Mysterio was, a villain. And so I was like, all right, well, Marvel's not going to veer that far away from the comics. So I kind of went in thinking that, okay, he'd start off as a friend and then he turned villain. But I didn't know how that was going to happen. So I very much enjoyed, you know, I liked the spin that they had. I liked the twist. And I do like the aspect that it was, Peter Parker really is just a kid and his judgment is not all the way there. And so, you know, it was just a really good take on it, I think. And, gosh, I love Jake Gyllenhaal. I mean, it was just good.
So I liked the fact that they did portray this as, what if this is a Mysterio coming from another universe? And I love the fact that they started the setup in Endgame talking about the multiverse. And then they go so far as to say, oh, I'm from another Earth. You're in 616. And that was so freaking cool. That being said, something just told me, you know, this is Mysterio. There's got to be something else going on here. And I want to know what you guys think. And I'm going to pose this, Megan, to you first.
Okay.
The idea of Edith, we know that Edith are the glasses that was given to Peter by Tony that says,
right.
Edith means even dead, I'm the hero. You know, not much of an ego there, Tony. But
right, of course not.
What did you think of Peter turning these glasses over to somebody he really barely knows?
Well, that's what I meant by, like, his judgment is just bad. It's just off. But I think that, well, not completely, but I think it kind of goes with his character. Like, especially in this movie, he was saying that he was not ready to be the Iron Man. That wasn't what he wanted. I do think that in this movie, they said friendly neighborhood Spider-Man way too many times. They said it about 50 times in this movie. I'm just a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I'm just 50 times. But I do think that they were trying to drill in the fact that he really just wanted to be, you know, he understood that he had this responsibility. But at the same time, he was just coming home from Endgame. He'd been gone for 5 years, even though he didn't know it. He, you know, like, things have changed. And he just wanted to be a student, a kid, which is completely understandable. And so you ask him to save the world as opposed to just New York City or just, you know what I mean? Like, that's way too much. So he's like, hey, I see another, you know, another superhero. And obviously, you know, the people that I do know and the people that, you know, are part of the Avengers, they trust you. So why shouldn't I? And so the way that Tony had the note or wrote the note that went with the glasses, it, you know, automatically he's thinking, well, he just gave me the option to choose. So while as a person in the audience was like, no, I don't think that's a good idea, because he thought that, you know, he saw him, he was obviously right there with, you know, with whoever was left from S.H.I.E.L.D., you can be trusted because the most paranoid person in the world trusts you. I can too.
Okay. So Ron, what do you think? You agree?
I agree with that. I totally agree with what Megan was saying. Jake Gyllenhaal smashed it as Quentin Beck, or aka Mysterio. Megan really smashed it about how you when I mentioned earlier about Peter, they really, the MCU have really made Peter a kid, and it constantly reminds you of that, especially on how he decides on things and how big, humongous events affect him. Like we were saying, he was decimated in Infinity War. And then when Endgame came, hit, 5 years has passed when he came back. And there's so much that he's trying to catch up on that is for him to want to take on the mantle of Iron Man. That's huge. And that's too big for him. He knows that. And he just wants to live his life, basically try to axe out MJ and just do what he's doing in Queens, New York. Mm-hmm. He's not really thinking about, you know, going out in space with, you know, Captain Marvel and Thor and all whoever in the Avengers to fight whoever the next baddie is. He just wants to finish high school and ask out Mary Jane on a date or MJ on a date.
And you know, that's what is so freaking cool about this movie is, you know, take yourselves for a second, you know, put yourself in that position. There was at some point for everyone, and everyone somewhat is different, but every one of us has a moment where our naivete or our trust of the world is shattered to some degree by someone betraying that trust, however that trust may be betrayed. Mm. And right. I think that's part of growing up. And I think that was a reminder for the audience to say exactly what the two of you have been saying. This is a teenager in high school who by circumstance has powers and by circumstance was given the keys to the kingdom from this multi-billionaire genius who had created all of this stuff and now says, you're going to, you know, here's your keys. And there's a point to where you have to make the mistake that Peter made in order for him to grow and become whatever he's supposed to become in this version of Peter. He has to have that mistake because he doesn't see what that mistake brought if he doesn't make the mistake. Does that make sense? Mm.
No, that makes sense.
You know, the first time that Tony tried to offer him the world is, you know, when he was like, hey, I want you to be an Avenger, he turned it down because he was like, hey, I'm not ready for this. Mm. And so, you know, in this one, he didn't have a choice. Essentially, he didn't think that he had a choice at first because Iron Man is gone. Iron Man hands him these glasses. He thinks he has a choice. And then, you know, obviously he makes the wrong choice. And he's like, all right, now give me the glasses. They're mine. I will have them and I will do what comes next. So in the next movie, obviously we'll see him take on this responsibility and he has a better appreciation for it because he lost it. And so now having it back, he's like, all right, like, you know, I appreciate it more and I know what I have to do. And you see the vulnerability in him when he's talking to Quentin on the bridge. And he's like, he's never had anybody betray his trust like that. He knew who the bad guy was and he knew who the good guy was. Primarily that's because he had, you know, he had Tony and he had people telling him like, hey, this is who we're fighting. Even in Civil War, you saw him. He was completely, you know, with Tony. And so the people he was fighting, he thought, I don't know if he necessarily thought they were bad guys, but he knew they weren't on his side. So he's always been told, hey, this is the bad guy. This is who you're fighting. This is who you're fighting for. And so now having to do this completely on his own, not really knowing, you know what I mean? Like that hurt him. You saw him crying. He was like, you can't fool me anymore. I trusted you. You lied to me. And so I think even battling Thanos, I think this grew him more. This matured him more. This experience having to do it on his own matured him more than Thanos.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And can I just say, did you feel heartbreak watching some of the big moments, like when he was fighting what I guess you could say was the Molten Man or the Elemental, Fire Elemental, and when all was said and done, Nick Fury was just grilling into him?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Mm-hmm. You could see, like, yeah, I felt that. Like, oh my gosh. Because
thank you. You did good.
Nothing. He was grilling into him and just, you felt that. And knowing like how, when you were a kid and you were put in this big situation, a situation that maybe you probably never asked for, and you did what you had to do, and then it wasn't enough. And that's what you got. That's what you saw on the screen right there. You could see in his eyes the way he was just like, I don't know what to do. I thought I was doing the right thing here, and it wasn't enough. So what do you ask for?
It's like it's like when your parents. It was triggering because it's like you do so much good, and all they see is the one thing that you miss. They say clean up, and you miss one spot, but they don't see the rest of it. Yeah, I mean you feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also sat back and like every encounter that Fury had with Spider-Man or Peter Parker in this one, I definitely sat back and I was like, this isn't like Fury. Like, I get that he was gone for 5 years, but, and you know, everything around him isn't his anymore. Like, it's, you know,
he was off his
life
game.
Went on. I was like, this doesn't sound like Fury to me. This isn't.
It didn't.
And so at the end, then I was like, all right, now I get it. That makes so much sense. I'm glad they went that direction.
Yeah. But see, even though they went that direction, guys, I still felt like that was Fury because I've got to disagree just a tiny speck because I see Fury as someone who doesn't have bedside manner with kids. Even if, you know, even with a teenager, I just didn't see Fury as having that, you know, being able to communicate other than bark orders.
But it just seemed like it was more than just barking orders. Like, this man was attacking. He was on attack mode, like, the entire time. Yeah. And I get not having the bedside manner, but he wasn't even that rude. I mean,
no, he wasn't even, like, especially when he was Tony. He has the most interaction with Tony in the, you know, the previous movies. And Tony has done a lot of bad decisions. Way worse than the decision that Peter ever did. And his approach to him, yes, it was tough love, but it still was like, it still had a bit of a human interaction with him, trying to show him, you know, a better way a little bit, in a sense. It was like Nick Fury was kind of off his game. Because even he said it, he's been gone for 5 years and he doesn't know anything. He mentioned that, he even said that in the movie, like, now I know nothing and I have nobody. Basically, he's like, he doesn't have S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. Doesn't have the, in a sense, doesn't really have the Avengers with him anymore. So he's basically, well, at the time you're thinking that he's Nick Fury starting from scratch. And all he has left really is, you know, tactical soldiers from S.H.I.E.L.D. and Maria Hill.
And that's all he has.
That's all he has.
So before we get to the ending, let me say this. One of the favorite parts of the movie for me was the point. Well, I love the black costume. That was cool. You know, you had a black costume without having the black costume, which was a good way to put that in there. But I liked the scene where Peter is building his own version of a mechanical Spider-Man suit. That was awesome. I thought that was cool.
I thought that was cool.
Because it was basically like, even obviously he's still going to be Spider-Man, but even without realizing what he was doing, he was stepping into Tony Stark's shoes. That's exactly what Tony does. And he, like, you know, you saw him put his hand in the hydraulic glove. And I was like, oh, this is great. Such a great port.
And you knew that. You saw the reaction with Happy when he was saying, like, wow, I'm looking at my best friend right now, doing this thing. I thought that was pretty cool. And you know what? Tom Holland has done a great job as Peter, far as showing his intelligence in these movies. Far more than has Andrew Garfield or Tom McGuire, to an extent.
Oh, I agree. 1,000,000% agree. There's just something refreshing about this dude that is just. I don't know. I hope he stays around as Spider-Man for many, 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 many movies to come. So
I do too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious as a person, like as an actor, he's very much enjoying it. And I think it also helps because he is young. He's only like 23 years old. So, and he's already done 5 movies. So, you know, he started at like 17, 18 or something like that. So, you know, I think that he would be very happy to continue doing this. And I mean, this is him. And he even said, like, when he was younger, that was his favorite Marvel
superhero.
So I would love to see him in it. And I do like the way they don't force it on you. Like, you know, Peter Parker is smart, but you forget, like, when he talked about the multiverse, it was very refreshing to hear him go on his little tangent because, I mean, I think it's just a very good balance between bad decisions because he's a teenager, like maybe not so much common sense, but he's got a lot of book smart. And they don't, you know, they don't stuff it down your throat. They don't throw it at you, but it's just like, it's just very, I like the way they mix it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Totally agree. So One thing else before we get into the mid-credits and the ending.
Oh, gosh.
The thing that was really cool to me was, yes, we knew that Mysterio did the things that he did based on illusion. But I love the detail and the time they took to explain that all of these were done by drones and that it was actually some drones that were coming in and, shooting whatever lasers or bullets or whatever to make the destruction. At the same time, another drone was creating the visual effects. I love the fact of how detailed they took time to explain all that to us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Oh, no, I was just saying, my only question was, before Edith, did they make their own drones? Because I saw like the little hydraulic thing that they had to show the visual effect. But what were they using to actually do the destruction? Because he didn't get all those drones until he had the glasses. So is that something that they made?
They had a handful. They didn't have as many before he had Edith. I think they had enough to do what they were doing, but not to the scale it was in the third act.
Agreed. Yeah, I think you're right there.
Yeah, they didn't have just that whole army from the Edith to make, to make them. They just had like a handful of them just to do, certain ones.
So they had actually like built those.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So what did
I think it was good.
So what did you guys think of the ending? We see that ultimately Mysterio is defeated almost to the point to where she is about to shoot Peter in point blank range in the head, basically, if it weren't not for his Peter tingle, which I just think was totally freaking hilarious that they kept saying that over and over and over.
And then he finally accepted it.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's freaking spider sense. Peter tingle doesn't sound right. Seriously. It doesn't sound right.
It doesn't. And then to have your aunt saying it to you and then happy. Like, that's just weird.
Yeah, it was. I was like, it's like nails on chalkboard.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's what it was supposed to be because they kept saying it.
Yeah. For sure.
But I was like, just call it spider sense and be done with it. Don't.
Yeah. I think they were trying to do that whole, parents trying to be cool of what you're doing. So they're trying to just throw out some little slang to you to make it seem like you're one of them or whatever. But it just didn't work.
Like saying hip.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, if y'all say Peter Tingle one more time, that's just, you got to stop.
Enough.
So we get to the mid-credit scenes, and let me say this first. I love the fact that MJ freaked out when she was being zipped around the city. I thought that was cool that she wasn't like, oh, this is cool. She's like, I'm never doing this again.
Never again. Right. No.
But we get to the mid-credit scenes, and we see J. Jonah Jameson, and we see the final repercussion of Mysterio, where he basically frames Peter for attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
Well, I clapped when I saw Janet Jameson.
Oh, the cameo was great.
Yeah, I loved that cameo. I was like, yes. I had to give a slow cap on that because I do not see anybody else playing John Janet Jameson. I cannot see anybody playing that character other than him. But the after effect, the consequences after fighting Mysterio and basically him framing him, that was Quentin Beck at his finest. That was his.
Yeah.
It was Quentin Beck at his finest. Is that he is trying his best to make Spider-Man look bad Beck, all he wants is to be recognized as being for who he is, good at what he does. And Spider-Man is this other figure that's in his way. So he's going to do all he can to frame him. And using this to frame him, that was Quentin Beck at his finest. And it solidified Jake Gyllenhaal being one of the best villains. I mean, it's a shame that they killed him off, but he really killed it, man. He really sold that being, you know, Quentin Beck, Mysterio. And it just, that moment makes you wonder what's going to happen in Spider-Man 3. Mm-hmm. It really does. Like, where is he going to be? Like, what, how is he going to face this? Because he's going to have so much publicity in his face. Even he thought that, you know, having a little bit of fame, going to seminars and banquets was bad. Now he's going to have paparazzi, New York Times, all those people like at his door now. And it's going to be very overwhelming and very
right.
It's scary. And also, like, what other villain is going to take advantage of that? Like, which villain is going to take advantage of that?
No, go ahead.
I was about to say, what do you think, Megan?
I think that I have the other two movies so ingrained in my head, especially the first one, because, I mean, I thought, for me, it's not so bad that Quentin framed Spider-Man, because, you know, for a while, even like, I thought even in the comics for a while, people hate Spider-Man because they think that he, you know, did something. And it's very common for people to believe these are heroes and then they make one mistake and now they hate them. You know what I mean? Like, that's very mm-hmm. common for people, you know, to be mercurial in that way. But I think it was a bit rash to say it was Peter Parker, because I thought that he worked for Jameson for a while. And he was, because you even saw him as he was swinging, he was taking pictures of himself. So I was like, oh, okay, that's gonna be, you know, his new thing. Like, he's gonna start working at the what is it, Daily Bugle. Yeah, the Daily Bugle. I was about to say something with Superman, but anyway, yeah, the Daily Bugle, and you know, he's gonna start turning in the pictures again with Jameson.
Now, well, they didn't mention or they didn't show any scenes of him working. Or,
yeah, I just assumed that would be in the future. So, I mean, yeah. Obviously they could do this in any way. They could, you know, Peter Parker can say something like, they could do this. They could spin this where, like, he's not there and then somebody else dresses up in a Spider-Man suit and, it, you mm-hmm. know, they could mm-hmm. squash this easily. So, still, it was very much like, oh, my goodness.
But, see, a lot of the problems that Spider-Man had, Megan, that you were referring to about people not liking him – came from J. Jonah Jameson constantly calling Spider-Man a menace, even when he never did anything. What the brilliance of the MCU did was they actually seemingly, whether it was doctored or not, gave J. Jonah an actual valid reason to dislike Spider-Man.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
You see what I'm saying? Because as far as J. Jonah knows, Spider-Man, Peter Parker did kill Mysterio.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I think it's very accurate for them to blame Spider-Man, but for Quentin to say Peter Parker, that blew my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I was already like, dang, he set up, but it makes sense because that's all he is. He illusion. I get mm-hmm. it. That part, I was like, okay, I mean, that just sets up the next movie. But then to already out Peter, that hurt. That hurt my heart. That hurt. But, you know, again, like I said, there's many ways that this can be squashed.
Yeah. Yeah, it could. Right. I mean, it just made me think that during Civil War comic book, when Peter gave out his identity to the public, he and Mary Jane and Aunt May went through hell after that. Like,
really?
Yes. Like, the whole city of New York were like after him, and not just villains, but just people who probably were affected when he was fighting other villains. They may have lost a home or a loved one or whatever. They were all, everyone yeah. was at or out him or after him. It was
it makes basic. Complete sense.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, that we might get that kind of aftermath of this whole that whole big reveal in the next movie. Because granted, you saw because during you know. That mid-credit scene where Peter, you know, Spider-Man, MJ were, you know, web-slinging through the city, he was about to leave her right in the middle of Times Square and take off.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
Now everyone saw her you know, some web slinging with him. Now they're going to ask, who is he? When she knows for a fact, she's going to be outed too.
Agreed.
Yeah. You know,
so let's jump ahead to the very, very end, the last credit scene, where we see Maria Hill and we see Nick Fury be revealed as not Maria Hill and not Nick Fury. So what did you guys think? And Ron, I'll let you go first. What did you think of this reveal?
Well, like I said, it kind of made sense, as we were saying earlier. It made sense of the behavior of Nick Fury during the movie. I'm really excited to see. I'm assuming this is all like setting up for Captain Marvel 2. So I'm really curious on what they got in store for that. And it shows, and also it also shows that Nick Fury really isn't off his game. He's using the scrolls to keep eyes on everybody on Earth while he's on vacation, in a sense.
Hmm. So Megan, what did you think?
Like Ron said, I believe that. My first impression was okay. Well, see, now that makes more sense the way he was acting. So that was my first thing. Then I had a billion questions. Like, how long has he been Nick Fury? Did the actual Nick Fury disappear, or did, you know, what are they called? The
Skrulls.
The Skrulls. How, you know, was it a Skrull that disappeared? And Nick Fury's just been in space this whole time with, you know what I mean? Like, I just started asking a bunch of questions, but, you know, I still have a lot of questions from Endgame. So I'm waiting for those to get answered because nothing was answered in this movie. But it just, I liked it. In my mind, immediately thought, oh, Kyle's going to like this when he sees it. Like, this is going to be something that he's going to like. Because you have been asking, like, you're wondering, you know, I'm sure you've been wondering who all is really a person, or who, you know, who they're supposed to be, and who's just a Skrull. So I wasn't mad at it. They, you know, they tied it all back. And so, yeah, when I saw that, I was like, okay, well, we're obviously setting up for another Captain Marvel. And, you know, I like how they're integrating these movies to be complete, like all of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, I'm not even really sure that Fury is on vacation. I think that's as close to the vacation that he can get. I think what he's doing is, like, you know, looking over the entire, like, he's got ears and eyes everywhere, right? So
yeah,
he's not really on vacation, but that's as close as he's ever gonna get.
Yeah. Did y'all like the whole, to me, I thought it was a kind of a shout out to Greg Clark when Nick Fury's in the hologram as if he's in the beach. I took that as him being on Tahiti. If y'all remember him, if y'all remember how they made it, made Coulson think he was on vacation, knowing that he really died, but he was on vacation in Tahiti. And everyone mentioned, okay, how was Tahiti? It was magical, whatever.
Oh, that was from S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I felt like that was a bit of a, you know, a tip off the hat to Coulson in the sense of him being in a hologram, and it, me thinking that was probably Tahiti.
Mm, interesting.
Oh, I like that little take.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I took it. I mean, I'm not sure if y'all did or not, but I thought that was kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. Well, another thing that they did that I thought was a real good twist, I actually accidentally, not purposely, but accidentally saw what the end credits were before I went to see the movie. So I knew that Nick Fury and Maria Hill were revealed to be Skrulls. And then whenever it said that, I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, Secret Invasion, here comes what I've been expecting, that Megan was expecting me to be expecting. But the fact that it was revealed to be the husband and wife set from the first Captain Marvel kind of
Talon and his wife, yeah.
Yes, totally took it in another direction. I still think there's going to be a Skrull invasion, Secret Invasion at some point, but I'm thinking that since S.H.I.E.L.D. is gone, I'm speculating that they are setting up instead an organization from the comics called SWORD, S.W.O.R.D.
Sword. Yeah.
And that stands for Sentient World Observation and Response Department. And it's basically S.H.I.E.L.D. in space.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes complete sense. It looks like that's what they already have. They just haven't named it yet.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. Bingo.
It's very possible they could do that. And I honestly think your theory on Secret Invasion still could happen. I think there could be a group of Skrulls, like extremist Skrulls, around operating on their own. I think that could be it. Because you didn't mention anything about the Super Skrulls.
Correct.
That they didn't mention about them. And so, I mean, they may be around. We might get to see, what's the leader's name? Clerk?
Yeah.
What was his name?
Yeah.
Yep, Clerk.
Yep.
We might get that. So we might get that.
I mean, I would 100% believe that they're like on Earth, though, because from the time that we had Captain Marvel to now, you can't tell me that there aren't Skrulls that were left behind or that went back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And just took, you know, and just took the identity of a person. I don't believe it at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested to see where they go with this.
Me too.
Me three.
Now, where's Maria? Or Marie. What's her name?
Maria.
Maria. Maria Hill.
Where is she? Because obviously we saw Fury.
Honestly, I think she's on that ship, probably doing something else, because I don't see her not departing from Nick Fury.
Yeah, I really don't. I agree.
I think she has like an undying loyalty to Nick Fury. So I don't see that
she wasn't like dead or anything.
She was probably around. She just... probably doing something else at the moment.
Before we give our final rating, let me say this. There is a possibility that Nick is not really in control of things up there. Maybe Nick is really in a cell and in some type of virtual reality where Maria is somewhere else in some virtual reality, and there is an active Skrull invasion going on, because a lot of things could happen to the husband and wife Skrull team since 1990 whatever and 2019 today. Just because they were good 30 years ago does not mean they're good today.
That's true. And isn't it like 2023 now? Haven't we like jumped because of the 5-year gap?
Oh yeah, good point still.
Yep,
very good point.
I also think it's very interesting that his entire high school, out of the half of the population that disappeared, his entire high school, or like at least his like main class, they all disappeared. Is that not strange to anybody? Because I thought that was very, very like weird.
That's all crazy. Except for like, one.
All except all for one.
Yeah. Yeah, all for except for one. It was Brad or Brandon was his name.
Which made no sense. That why is he still in school with them?
Because he's like 21.
Yeah. That made no sense. Why didn't he just go ahead and finish school? I mean, totally didn't make sense. You had a grown-up dude.
Oh, wait a minute. That's what they were saying. So they were saying that he was the one that was grown.
Pretty much, yeah.
That he was supposed to be 21 all of a sudden.
Which is kind of weird.
That's what that meant. I thought that he just had a growth spurt.
Because he was the only one that didn't, like... disappear because
That's creepy though, because if he's 21 years old,
he was hitting on MJ.
No, that can't, you guys, that can't be it. Now again, I missed the first like three to four minutes, but there's no way he did not disappear and he's still in high school hitting on a 16-year-old and he's 21.
Yeah.
There's no way Marvel let that happen.
See, we're not supposed to go like this. We're not supposed to go this deep into it. But you've got a very good point that I never even thought about.
I was thinking that the whole entire movie. I was like, if he's 21. Then...
I genuinely just thought that it was a growth spurt. Because, you know, like, kids typically have their growth spurts in high school. So I thought that meant he just... it came back and he grew. But what?
Yeah, he grew a lot.
That was a flaw.
It's like, no, he didn't like disappear. That's what it meant. He did. He lived his life while everybody else was disappearing when he came back.
He was like, let me go back to sophomore or junior year.
At first, I was thinking maybe he probably already graduated and maybe he was just like a parapro, maybe. A chaperone,
but okay, that would be even worse if that was the case. But if still, he was the chaperone and he's hitting on the 16-year-old girl,
I was like, but he's still hitting on a 16-year-old girl. I was like,
I can't believe that. I'm gonna have to write. I think I'm gonna tweet Marvel and ask. That cannot be right.
Okay, so Ron, let me tell you something about Megan. If she don't let her get on like something that she's passionate about, because go back and listen to, I think it was episode 2 of this show discussing comics, and Clarence made a comment about Michael B. Jordan, and I don't remember what it was, but I thought she was about to come through the mic at him.
He wasn't good. Like, he didn't like him or something. He wasn't a good actor. I was like, well, wait a minute. He said something like along the effects of he's like the same person in every movie. And that's just not true.
See, and if you notice, I try to insert little tidbits. Like, there was no absolute zero reason for me to bring up the Fantastic Four in this movie, except I wanted to bring up to see if I could get you started again.
Yeah.
So on that note, why don't we give our final ratings on a scale of 1 to 5? And Megan, since I was just picking on you, scale of 1 to 5, what would you give this movie?
1 to 5? I mean, like I told you, I've said this always, and I'm very generous when it comes to movies, but I genuinely like this one. So I'm going for like a 4.8, and I can't think of what would have made it better. So, I mean, I probably should just go ahead for the 4.5, but, you know, I'm scared that I might see something that's going to blow me away and I'm going to want to take it back. So I'm just going to say 4.8 and keep it there.
All right. Ryan, what about you?
Well, if I can look past the rapey teenager / adult guy in the movie.
I refuse to believe that's what that is. I refuse. I'm not believing that's what they did. I refuse.
So I have to give it, I really want to give it a 5. I really do. I know there, I mean, I haven't really pointed out any like negatives about the movie during our conversation, but the only thing I probably like, that was probably one of the like ticks I would probably put on. I'd say I have to give it like a 4.9. I give a 4.9.
All right. So, I intended, and if I've already read this once, I am reading it again because it's worth reading again. Our friend of the show, Heather, has sent in some feedback, and she writes about this movie that she really liked it. She personally thinks that this is the best Spider-Man movie so far it goes to the live action movies. And we did a poll this afternoon on our Facebook group, which you can go to facebook.com, look up groups and search for Discussing Network. And everyone voted it as a 5. So everyone that's voted this far has said that it was a 5. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say 4.9. No movie is perfect. So, but I will say that it was very enjoyable. I had fun. Mm-hmm. And I think this was just a fun movie to watch.
Agreed.
Yeah, it was. It really, really was.
Agreed.
All right. So, Ron, if people listening wanted to find other things that you work on, where might they go?
Right now it's just Extremely Geeked Out. But you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. Good deal. And Megan, where else could you be found on the internet?
I have a blog, www.mlmcgeebooksandblogs.com. I have a book that I wrote that is on Amazon. It's called My Brother's Keeper by ML McGee. And I believe that's it for right now. I'm working on another book, so hopefully that'll be out in the near future.
Sweet, sweet. So for anyone listening, thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the show using Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast player. And with that, and thank you both for being on with me, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.